Good morning. Welcome to Camp Meeting 2020. This has been a different experience for those of us who are living here and in this province. Typically, we come together in large numbers, could be 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 or more of us, to enjoy the experience of fellowship and time together. But 2020 has not allowed us that opportunity. Of course, COVID has impacted all of our lives and changed the way we do business, or in some cases, don't do business. But we're glad that you're here today. And as I speak this morning, of course, many things now have opened up, and many things are starting to look like normalcy once again. And so we're grateful that God has seen us through. I will report that, to my knowledge, there have been no casualties in the Seventh-day Adventist Church membership, and for that we are deeply grateful. I must also say that during the darker times in March and in April, you remain faithful and continue to give, and were faithful in your tithe and so forth, so that we were able to continue with a full complement of teachers and pastors. And so thank you for that and your faithfulness during very difficult times. Well, this morning, I thought I would take a few moments and share with you as we endeavor to reflect on the shepherd. There are many ways, of course, we could have looked at this and see how we could model Jesus in our lives. And so of late I've been studying the disciples of Jesus. And I want to take a look at one individual in particular, and his name is Peter, of course, the second of the 12 disciples that were selected by Jesus. And to look into his life. His life is an inconsistent life. Peter is known for his high highs and his very deep lows. And yet how Jesus was able to work with him and have confidence in him and see something beyond the here and now as Peter stood before him, and was able to see some greatness, some potential in him. And I'd like to reflect on that in such a way as to share that we need to have that same kind of view and be able to see that view in others around us as well, whether they be our children, perhaps our spouses, perhaps other family members, or even fellow church members, to be able to see and to pray for and to uplift and to see the potential in each one of us, despite where we may be at that particular moment. Let me just reflect a little bit on Peter, give you a little background information on him. Peter, of course, is the best known of the 12 disciples. Peter was married, and his wife accompanied him. At least that's what the Apostle Paul referred to in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 5. Peter was a successful small businessman, really, an owner, if you will. Peter spoke Aramaic. Of course, he wrote 1 and 2 Peter, and so we know a little bit of his speaking abilities and his dynamics and what he could write in and so forth. So he spoke Aramaic. He most likely knew Greek, as it was a very common language during this time. And we know from his standard upraising as a young Hebrew boy that he would have been taught the scriptures in Hebrew, which would have been a standard thing for most young boys at that time. So while not highly educated, it would perhaps be incorrect to think that Peter was just an ignorant fisherman either. He certainly would have had basic education, would have been acquainted with several languages, spoken several languages. Peter's home was in Capernaum. And Capernaum would serve as Jesus' headquarters for his Galilean ministry. I had the privilege a few years back to visit Capernaum and to visit the historical sites there. And among those excavations, they had found a typical home of that era. They called it Peter's house, but I'm certain it wasn't actually Peter's house, but it was a house just like it. And so it was kind of cool to see the dimensions and so forth, relatively small with just a couple of rooms, and was only seemed like a couple hundred feet from the local synagogue there in Capernaum. As I said, the life of Peter was an inconsistent life. Peter had his ups and he had his downs, and you never knew for sure what you were getting with Peter. Reminds me when our children were younger, much smaller, and my wife and I, Elmira, we would often in the summers take our kids on simple vacations. Usually it was to the beach. When we lived back in eastern Canada, it was the beaches of Prince Edward Island or one of the national parks in Newfoundland or something like that. When we were out here, one of the places that we took our children was to Yellowstone National Park. And Yellowstone, of course, is famous for all the geysers that erupt there. And of course, Old Faithful being the most prominent of those. And we went there, and sure enough, almost on the hour, it would erupt. And then another hour later, approximately, it would erupt again and so forth. But not all of them were like that. Some of those were very inconsistent. You never knew when they were going to erupt. They could erupt now. They might not erupt again for 5 years from now. There was one that only erupted every like 100 years and so forth. So Peter was more like one of those that you knew not when they were going to erupt or explode. Sit quietly, and then, of course, would erupt. And so Peter was like this. No disciple was spoken about more often than the Apostle Peter. And, of course, at the same time, no disciple needed to be spoken to more often than did the Apostle Peter. And then no other disciple so boldly confessed Jesus as what Peter did. And then conversely, no one interfered with Jesus' plans more than Peter did. Jesus spoke words of approval, praise, and even blessing to Peter more than to the rest of his first followers. But Jesus also said harsher things to Peter than to any of the other disciples. Unfortunately, one of Peter's biggest flaws was that he simply talked too much, responded too quickly without thinking of what he would say first. Peter was the first to speak up when it made him look good, when in the synagogue, when all the faithful were listening, he gave the loudest and the longest testimonies about his loyalty toward Jesus. But sadly, before the palace guards, where it mattered the most, he was silent. So I'd like to kind of look at Peter's life a little bit in three parts, if we could, for the next few moments together. I'd like to look at this first part and call it when Peter is given his call, given his mandate, given his Jesus wanting to include him in the first disciples. Jesus gives Peter a new name, and it's found, of course, in John chapter 1, verse 41 and 2. And let me just read that real quick with you. It says this: "One of the two who heard John speak and followed him was Andrew, Simon Peter's brother. He found first his own brother Simon and said to him, 'We have found the Messiah,' which translated means Christ. He brought him to Jesus and looked at him and said, Jesus said to him, "You are Simon, the son of John, but you shall be called Cephas," which is translated to mean Peter. Jesus knew Simon's name, of course, but he saw great potential. Simon means a dove, a fluttery creature that flies very inconsistently. And so that was his name. He knew Peter was like the sea on which he worked. He was an impetuous man with changing moods. Some days he was really up and some days he was really down. And his life was so inconsistent that you never knew quite sure what to expect or get from Peter. Jesus said to this wavering individual, "I'm going to rename you, give you a new name." And he did it from day one. And he said, "I'm going to rename you as Peter," which of course means the rock, the stable, the unchanging one. I suppose that might have drawn a snicker from his brother or from relatives who knew him a little better, because Peter was certainly not that way. It would be like calling perhaps a bald-headed man Curly in jest. But in the end, Simon would live up to his nickname. Yes, he was unstable. He was impulsive. He was ever-changing. But he eventually became solid and stable as the rock that his new name implied. That day, Jesus was saying to Simon, "Yes, you are impulsive. You're weak at times. You're hot-tempered. Sometimes you can be brave and sometimes cowardly. But you will be, you have the potential of becoming Peter, a rock, firm, brave, mature, full of faith." No one else that day would have looked at Peter and seen the potential that he would have to become a spiritual giant. And that's the amazing thing about Jesus. He looks at us and He doesn't just see us for what we are right now. He doesn't see us with all our shortcomings and our tempers and our various character flaws. He looks at us and sees what we can become, what he can make us into being if we will simply follow him. And so the invitation was given for Peter to follow. You know, the Bible is full of examples wherein God saw their potential in spite of their past. I think of Abraham, the worshiper of idols who became the founder of Israel. I think of Moses, who was the murderer, and God changed him so that he would later become a great deliverer in Israel. Rahab, the woman of the night, who then we find her name recorded in Hebrews chapter 11, that great faith chapter, along with the other greats of that particular chapter. Jonah and John Mark were failed missionaries. But God saw beyond that, and they would eventually become great instruments and great workers in his cause. Paul, the killer of Christians, was now greatly used of God, and thousands would come to know Jesus through his immediate ministry and through some 14 books of the Bible that he wrote in the New Testament. What a great use God was able to make of him. The files of heaven are filled with stories of the redeemed and the refitted and the renegades and the rebels. After all, Christianity really is a story about people who used to be. Mary Magdalene used to be. Matthew Levi used to be a tax collector and viewed as a traitor. And Bartimaeus, he used to be blind. And Lazarus, he used to be dead. It's a story, really, about people who used to be, But God saw the potential. Jesus saw the potential. And so they were able to move forward. I would say it's also true of each of us. We are all used to bees. God sees not just our past, but our future potential as well. It has been stated that every saint has a past and every sinner has a future. One of the things that I'm privileged to do as a pastor, and I enjoy doing it, and it's always something that was a fun thing to do, and that was visit people in their homes. I would get to visit younger families, often got to visit our seniors who resided either in their home still or in a place where they would go and live their remaining years. And one of the questions, I always had a few questions that I would ask people. One of the questions I would always ask them is, so tell me, how is it that you became a Christian? How is it that you had that experience? Tell me a little bit about what, were you always as you are today, or were you different at some point in time? And they would, with a smile on their face and a twinkle in their eye, reflect back on the decades, and many of them, of course, had become Christians at some point in their lives, and they would tell me these great stories of how God had taken them from what they were. And some told me, well, I used to be a criminal. I would steal things and orchestrate theft and so forth, and I even spent some time in prison, but God was able to change me. And I became an upright citizen. And others tell me stories about how God found them in some forlorn country in Europe as they were dealing with some civil war and some unrest and all the things that they had to deal with. And God was able to call them forth and help them find their way to a new place and a new country and get established and become who they are today. Many would tell stories of estrangement between themselves and family and others and so forth, and how God was able to get into their lives and make a difference, and all the changes that came from what God did. Some told stories of how they used to be drunkards and how when they would come home from work, their kids would hide under the beds and the tables and wherever they could, and how God was able to change their lives so that there was joy and happiness when they came home. So God is able to take people from wherever they were, from whatever used to be was their experience, and change them into the people that they were that day. God does want to see the potential in every person. What does God see in you and I when He looks? I would like to say that as He looks at you as a Christian, He sees a committed person. He sees a devoted follower. And He sees a great volunteer who likes to help out and do many things. He sees a servant who has a heart for service and is willing to help in every way possible. He sees a great witness of His love in how you relate to your fellow man and how you relate to your family, your spouse, and your children, and people close and far away. He sees the young, the middle-aged, the old, and He sees us all waiting together hand in hand for that great second coming day. He sees throngs traveling and wanting to be with Him as He makes His way back to heaven. That is the kind of thing that Jesus sees in you and I. You know, Peter, to his credit, left his job and his home to follow Jesus. And he immediately, it says in Matthew 14, becomes a leader of the 12 disciples. And that story, of course, is one of Peter walking on the water. He exercises incredible faith and steps out and walks in that particular story. He's on a great high. Of course, we all know that Pride takes over very quickly, and suddenly he begins to sink, and he goes to an equally low. But Jesus brings him back to the surface. Being a rock, you know, is a good thing, unless, of course, you're trying to walk on the water. And Jesus says, "Oh, you of little faith." And that must have hurt Peter when he was at that low moment. But he takes him by the hand and restores him again. On one occasion, Jesus was asking Peter and asking all the disciples, "Who do people say that I am?" He repeated that question many, many times. Peter responded, "You are the Son of the Living God," in Matthew chapter 16, verse 16. Peter was commended for his insight, and he was on a high. Jesus then tells the disciples that he will have to suffer and be crucified in the next short while. And Peter once again raises to himself and forbids Jesus and says, "Never, Lord, this cannot be." And so much so did he get on that way that finally Jesus had to say these very harsh words, "Get thee behind me, Satan." So in the one moment he's praised, he's having a great experience. The next minute he is down once more, leading this very inconsistent life. Jesus then includes Peter in the transfiguration experience, you know, when they went up into the mountain and Jesus was going to meet there with Elijah and Moses. Following this event, he states clearly that the disciples, will fall away and not be faithful. But Peter interjects once more and says, "I alone will be faithful. Everyone else will leave you, but rest assured, come what may, I'll be the one. You won't see hiding your hair of them, but I'll be there." And of course, Peter states his statements of affirmation and so forth quickly change when reality begins to hit for in quick succession. Several failures on the part of Peter are to be noted. First of all, he failed to stay awake and pray with Jesus in Gethsemane as Jesus was about to go through the crucifixion week. Then when the soldiers came to take him, Peter whips out his sword and swings it and cuts off the ear of the servant. The Bible suggests that really he wasn't after the ear at all, but perhaps the head of the servant. And then, of course, was the biggest denial. The denial that we remember so well is when Jesus is being taken from Caiaphas to Pilate and so forth, and then Peter is there in the garden and watching these things, and people approach him and saying, "Aren't you one of his followers?" And he says, "No, I'm not." And another person comes up and said, "You sound like..." "No, I'm not. I don't know him." And the third time, of course, to convince people, he begins to use all kinds of foul language, and it doesn't say what he actually said, but other than to say that with cursing he denies Jesus. And as he does so, it says that the rooster crowed in the distance, and Peter is reminded of his words that come rolling back to haunt him, that he said he would never deny Jesus, and now he has done so on three different occasions. After all his big boasts and his strong words, Peter was weak. He was an inconsistent Christian. I imagine this denial in the garden was probably the lowest point that Peter would fall to. And Jesus, after his death and so forth, I wonder what was going through Peter's mind. He probably thought to himself, Well, whatever position, whatever Jesus saw in me certainly did not come to be. The potential that he was seeing and the expectation that he had and the hopes and dreams he had for me, surely I have dashed all of those. I have been an inconsistent Christian. I have lived a life of ups and downs and now have denied him, and surely he will not think anything more of me and my time of being a Christian and being in a state of acceptance is now over. That's what perhaps was going through Peter's mind. However, after the resurrection, it says that Jesus met with the disciples over a period of some 40, 50 days. Following that, met with them in various places on the seashore and, of course, in the upper room. And Peter is with the disciples. To his credit, he's with the disciples. And that's the really cool thing is that even though he felt such despair, he was still at least in a place where Jesus could meet with him. He came to be in a place where he would have this opportunity if Jesus should show himself as he promised to do so, at least he would be there. And so Jesus comes to Peter. And we know the story well. We've read it many times and heard it many times in various iterations and drama and so forth. And Jesus comes to Peter and says, "Peter, do you want to be someone who is forgiven and restored? And do you want to be part of that ministry again?" And he says it in the words, "Peter, do you love me?" And Jesus and Peter responds and says, "Of course I love you." Jesus wanted Peter to understand what true servanthood would be. Jesus gives him the commission of feeding his sheep. He wants Peter to be a teacher and a leader, and Peter would now truly become the rock that Jesus spoke of. No longer would he be living such an inconsistent life. But Jesus never gave up on Peter, and he repeated this three times, the significance of which is often that it corresponds to the fact that Peter denied Jesus three times, and now he's given an opportunity to be restored three times. And Peter responded to Christ's confidence in him and not his own confidence in himself. It says that Peter quickly takes on the role of a leader in Acts chapter 1 and 2. When the church is scattering and without a leader, Peter steps forward. He steps into the void and he begins to act and behave like the rock that Jesus said he would become. The potential that Jesus saw in Peter now comes to be. It says there in Acts chapter 3 that he spoke a sermon there. And the sermon had a great impact, of course, filled the room and the area being filled with the Holy Spirit and impacting on people. And 3,000 were converted that particular day. Acts records for us the wonderful ministry of Peter. I was just reading it again today and up to about chapter 11 or 12 or so. Peter is featured prominently in the book of Acts. And for those first 10, 15 more years, he was the rock that the early church people leaned on because he was now faithful and he was consistent and he was strong and he was committed to what Jesus had called him to be. We hear the story in Acts chapter 9 about the healing of the paralytic man. We read then a little later of the raising of Tabitha. And Peter was strong and bold and confident for Christ. And yet he remained humble enough to listen to correction from the Apostle Paul when it was necessary. Yes, Peter's life had been an inconsistent one. Now it comes to stand for encouragement to all. For even though we are not always what we should be, Christ sees our potential. He sees the potential in you and I. The Lord has never given up on any of us. He continues to intercede on your behalf. He is the one who forgives our sins and keeps us in His will, and He never gives up. He sees, like He did for Peter, the future that He has in store for you and I. Peter, it says, would write, of course, the two books that bear his name, 1 and 2 Peter. It's also said that his life was the inspiration for the book that was written by Mark, the second book in the New Testament. Peter preached at Pentecost, we know. He became the leader of the infant church. He led them through the process of selecting a replacement for Judas. He went to Rome in AD 31, where he would give his life as a martyr eventually. And I guess for me, as I look at the life of Peter, I'm reminded not so much of how weak and how inconsistent he was, but of God's great patience with him. I was able to see through his failings what Peter could become. Peter needed to be forgiven on several occasions, and that was how he was restored. But I think of myself, and I think of you, and I think of all of us, and I realize that our lives are largely no different. I'm sure there's been times when you regret as well an inconsistent life on your own part. But still, God is there to forgive. I remember many times, but this one time in particular where I certainly needed forgiveness. It was a Sunday morning, and the kids were little, and the oldest boy was probably 6 or something like that, 6 or 7. And usually on Sunday mornings, if you're going to sleep in at all, that tends to be the morning when you take an extra few moments. And sometimes the kids are up before you are. And so I went downstairs. It was still probably only 8 o'clock, I suppose, on a Sunday morning. And Elmira and I had just bought a brand new sofa. It was beautiful. And it was in our early years, and so we didn't have a lot of furniture. And we didn't have a whole lot of new stuff, but we had bought a lovely big sofa, and it was made of this material that was so comfortable and firm and yet pleasant to recline in. And so as I came down over the stairs, to my horror, in my oldest son's hand was a felt tip marker. And as I looked at the couch, I saw the evidence of considerable writing on our brand new couch. And it wasn't material that you could take quickly and wipe. It wasn't wooden. It was cloth material. And it was written with lovely drawings of all kinds of things. And I remember grabbing it out of his hand and reprimanding him for writing all over our new couch and so forth, and getting angry with him, and only to realize that when I stopped for a moment to listen to what he was saying, he had taken the marker from his next younger brother. There are 3 boys and 2 girls. And he had taken the marker from his next younger brother, who was about 4, who had been the one who was writing it up. And so he was trying to save the couch, but he was the one who got the full brunt of my reprimand. And that morning I realized that I needed his forgiveness. And sometimes you have to do that more often perhaps than we care for. We have to seek the forgiveness of those that we have in somehow taken disadvantage of or something like that, and we need their forgiveness. But life is much more extensive than that. It's true in work. It's true when we come to church and how we interrelate to one another and how we deal with one another. We constantly need, like Peter, to be restored. We constantly need not only for ourselves to be restored, but to extend forgiveness to others who are there as well. And I think that that's why I enjoy Peter's story so much, is because Christ was so patient, so long-suffering, and had dealt with him for years, and still always saw the potential in him, still saw what he could become. And the story is meant for all of us. It's a story that says, doesn't matter the life we have lived, it doesn't matter the inconsistencies, Christ is able to forgive and to restore and to once again bring us back into that full expression of servanthood with him. And so I'd like to encourage all of you as you listen to Reflecting the Shepherd through this week and the various things you'll hear, to be reminded that each one of us have that opportunity to be restored. May God bless you. May this be a great camp meeting experience. As you know, we're having all the regular services, that is to say, Sabbath mornings and evenings and weekends and phone-in prayer time and radio talks and children's programs, and all of that is available to you. And as you hear it and as you have a chance to grow once again spiritually and to be restored one more time, I pray that you'll remember that Jesus is there for you. He wants to restore you. He wants to keep you in the palm of his hand. He sees all the potential of what you can become. And so I pray that God would bless you to be all that he wants you to be.